Hello, everybody. This is Christina with On Request Magazine, and I'm here today with a very, very gifted actor, Cliff Curtis. How are you, Cliff?
I'm great. Thanks, Christina. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I just want to tell you that I've been a fan of your work for some time, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you very much. That's kind.
Oh, you know, you're such a...
Well,
I can tell our listeners a little bit about you, and then we're going to talk about this great new series you're in, but you have such a list of acting credits. I couldn't possibly ever list it all here. That's how many you have. And, you know, for our listeners out there, you know, Cliff has been in some amazing movies and TV series as well, including Training Day and worked with Martin Scorsese and... You know, Whale Rider, The Piano, so many. It's incredible. So this is who we're speaking with today, everybody, and we're lucky to be doing that. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your career before we talk about the series, if that's okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're very kind.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, you had started out in, people don't know this, if they've seen you, may not relate to the fact that you were born in New Zealand, born to a very big family, and I know that your mother was a dancer, as were you at one point, correct?
A dancer? No, my mother wasn't a dancer, but I did start out in dance sort of as a bit of a hobby because of my father.
Oh, okay.
He was like a rock and roll dancer, this week's style. And I was forced to go with him as a young teenager. And so rather than get bored, I started dancing 50s rock and roll, and then I won the national championships with my dance partner a couple of years ago.
Wow.
And that was sort of how I got, that's kind of how I got into doing choreography. I did break dancing as well, and then got into doing choreography. I was sort of amateur theater productions, and then from there did amateur musicals and amateur plays, one-act plays, and then, because I left school when I was about 14, and to work for my dad, and then from there, then I went back to school to study acting when I was about 19, 20.
What first got you interested in the thought of acting? You know, I don't know what usually sparks people's interest more, you know, when they don't really have anyone in the family who's doing that, but what really sparked your interest in acting?
It was a really reluctant interest in acting. I wasn't really, the worst thing you can possibly be where I come from is a show-off.
Right.
It's considered the complete, you know, that's the worst insult is to be considered a show-off. Started through this sort of amateur performance stuff, which was more around dance. But the big transition is when I was dabbling in these one-act plays, I saw an amateur production, again, amateur stuff, of a play by Edward Albee, a classical play called Look Back in Anger. And I was watching the play, and I completely forgot I was watching the play. And at one point, I wanted to, the lead character, one of the lead characters' name was Cliff, which sort of helped, I suppose, and he was such an asshole. I wanted to sort of like stand up and, because he was being really, really mean to his girlfriend.
Right.
And I couldn't believe that everybody was sitting around and letting this guy carry on he was and like being so mean to his girlfriend. I just really wanted to get up and smack him in the face. And then the lights came on and it was half time. And I couldn't believe that I was so drawn into it. It completely, something very strange happened. And I was so confused by how these amateur actors had completely sucked me into this little kind of drama that I forgot I was watching a play.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, that was amazing. So I knew I couldn't go back to getting roles because I was a manual laborer at that time, and I knew I had to sort of figure out a new plan in life. And that was the beginning of me knowing I couldn't do what I was doing for the rest of my life, and I had to do something else. And then it's a bit of a long story, but I found my way back to acting. It took me a long time to accept that I was an actor, and I trained and took concerts for about 10 years before I could say, okay, I guess I'm an actor, I'm getting paid, I'm actually working consistently.
That's really a great story. I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from, and you definitely play every character that I've ever seen you play with such conviction. You know, it amazes me just how you step into the role, and really, it seems to sort of take you over in a way. And like I said, very convincing, and that is what I, you know, really love about this character you're playing now in Javier Acosta. He's such a great, great character, and I love the show. And, you know, you've had the opportunity to play, you know, various ethnicities, but you really seem to step into the shoes of a Latin American gang member or head of this gang family very, very well. How did you prepare for doing this role?
Well, it sort of happened just by sense of availability of work. You know, I just got offered, I think what happened, it started with Training Day was the first time it happened. And once I played that role in Training Day, all of a sudden I was kind of like, believable in that character for the audience and creative staff. That just kind of became my staple.
Right.
And so kind of became, oh, well, okay, he could play Latin roles and the audience believes him in those roles. And then I did a number of other Latino roles, and it just became a part of my repertoire. Like an opera singer, you know, you sort of have a repertoire.
Right.
You know, the other thing I play is like detectives and FBI and CIA and cops and those kinds of things too. So, of course, bad guys in many ways are more memorable.
Well, you do
such stand out.
Oh, absolutely, and it's a lot. I think very challenging to play a bad guy who also seems to have somewhat of a conscience underneath. So that's what I really, you know, I saw.
Yeah, you know, I don't tend to view the characters I play as bad guys. I tend to sort of like think, well, what circumstance would lead a person's life where they'd end up doing something that they couldn't undo, that perhaps they'd regret for the rest of their lives, but they've got to live with it.
Right.
And so I built this quite complex backstory around the characters that I do, trying to understand their psychology from a point of view that they feel that they were doing the right thing. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Oh, no, absolutely.
That's how I kind of construct these things.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense to me, actually, especially in the life of a gang leader, you know, which is, you know, something that there's a very tight bond inside a gang, and they think they're doing the things that they do for all the right reasons, right?
Well, I think a lot of them do. I don't say all of them. I think sometimes, you know, some of them are just bad guys. I don't know, but for me, I can't relate to some of the things these guys do. So it's a real struggle for me to really sort of think. I really put a lot of effort into trying to understand how they end up doing the things they do, you know?
Right, right. Well, you know, being myself, I'm a Latin American, and
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah, the series itself seems to really capture, you know, the theme of family and how just the closeness in a Latin American family, which, you know, is something that I've seen myself personally throughout my life. And, you know, it also seems to tie in with the gang life too, because loyalty is huge. It's key in everything that they do. Is the whole, you know, theme of the tightness of the family and loyalty something that you can relate to from your own upbringing?
No, yeah, absolutely. I take the idea of playing other people's ethnicity very seriously. I think it's a really big responsibility. And so I, in the same way, I sort of think, I try to understand, you know, from my point of view, the issues of loyalty and family, like how important these things are to the Latin community. And so in this show, one of the best things about the show for me is I love going to work and spending time with my Latino family, because we're just got such a great cast and crew and and they're really incredibly generous, and they embrace me and accept me, knowing that I'm not Latino myself, and they encourage me. And I couldn't do the show without them, to be honest, and they've been amazing across the board.
Wait, you definitely do us justice, that's for sure. So I thank you for that. You know, it's really nice to see someone, you know, outside of your ethnicity come in and step into those shoes and just do it so well and do it with passion. So that's fantastic.
I think a number of the things that we sort of explore, you know, I think that all indigenous cultures can relate to, you know, is the sense of disenfranchisement by the dominant cultures, like even the word minority being a minority culture. These kind of like labels, they're kind of like a rally cry for indigenous cultures to sort of unite and say, well, okay, you know, what can we do? So there are similar stories if you look globally about how indigenous cultures, like, what do you think? Latin's a very broad term, but I relate strongly to the Native American cause or the Mexicano cause or, you know, the Aztec cultures, you know, these indigenous cultures.
Right.
But, you know, it's broader, much broader than that. I personally, because of my Maori background, I relate very much to those realities and their struggles.
Well, that,
you know, people from those cultures, family is everything. You know, family is the be all and the end all. And all of the depth of richness and all of the struggles that come with that. You know, it's not necessarily a pretty picture all of the time.
No, that's true. That's very true. I mean, sometimes family ties are amazing, and it's great to have that backup in a sense. And then at other times, family can be very difficult in every culture across the board. So, yeah, it's
yeah, and that we all can relate to.
Absolutely,
that's what makes these stories. Yeah,
absolutely. I know that you don't have a lot of time, and I just had a few other things I wanted to touch on real quick. And you know, in last week's episode, your character showed that your heart still plays a role in the decision making when you let your rival son go. Will we see a change in Javier as the series progresses? Will he become a lot more hardened?
I think you're smart, audience, and there's no point in trying to pull the wool over your eyes, because you pretty much, you know, you can see the writing's on the wall. You know, what he wants is a noble thing for his family, but it's just not going to be that easy.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of struggles ahead for him. But I think that's going to be the big challenge for the character, and I'm very interested to see how the audience relates to him, whether they can go through some of these, like what the last, oh gosh, there's so much to talk about. In the last episode, he makes this big decision because he sees the irony of the choices he's made, and it's like, it does come back in later in the series.
Right.
That decision to have compassion, to choose compassion over revenge, and to believe, and a lot of that I think comes from his wife, his relationship with his wife, and for his relationship with his own son, that, you know, an eye for an eye until we're all blind. That's the logical outcome of revenge, you know?
Exactly.
So he tries it, and it works to an extent, and I think it's going to be the interesting thing is whether the audience can continue to stay connected to this character while he goes through some very, very tough times ahead. Yeah, he's going to go through a few thrillers. But, you know, the creators of the show and everybody's determined to... Some audiences are going to struggle with some of the choices that Javier makes, and others are going to understand that in his world, you've got to be careful, you know. Even though you've got this theme, I've got this idea of a guy who wants to get out of that way of life, I've got this whole backstory of my character as an orphan, and he lost his parents, and he wants to make his parents proud, because because of all of the shameful things he's done in his life. So that's the internal engine of the guy.
Right.
That he's got this internal dialogue with his dead parents. Like, he wants to make his mother proud. He wants to make his father proud. And, you know, every time he does a bad act, that he's asking their forgiveness, and he feels shame for these things. It's got a really deep well of conflict going on there. But every time he does something wrong, rationalizes that he's doing it for his family. So that's the kind of world he's in. That's the path he set himself. Right or wrong, that's how he lives. And in this gang sort of mafia type sort of world, you know, you can't have them make soft choices because they do these things in real life. Some of these types, they do these things, and to be in that world, how do you get somebody, how does somebody who's in that world get out of that world? That's going to be whether we get there by the end of the season or we're going to get another season to explore that. That's going to be the interesting journey we're just going to go on.
Well, yeah.
And whether they can take the hard times that Avi has to go through and his family has to go through, and they can remain hopeful that there's a chance for them all to come through and actually have a bigger dream for themselves, you know, actually believe that as this sector, because not all Latino families have these issues, you know, most Latinos are just hardworking, honest people who go to church and say their prayers and love their children. And you know, you go to any park in Los Angeles on a Saturday and a Sunday, and they're just full of Latino families, and all they're doing is just like looking after their kids and celebrating birthdays, and you know, and I love that sort of that part of the culture of Los Angeles, and it's very, very evident. Take a moment to sort of observe it. They work all day and all night. These guys are working 24 hours around the clock. A lot of them, you know, they're partying, you know, but a lot of the workforce and the labor in America, these guys work 4 or 5 jobs, and I'm not joking. That's not an understatement. It's a real thing.
Right, absolutely.
And so I feel those things, you know, from a human perspective, and this particular family does not in any way represent the greater Latino population, but I think that even though we're exploring a gang life, they still connect to those family values, and they still want to be a part of the greater community. They want to contribute, or my character does anyway. Perhaps one of my sons does and one of my sons doesn't. But as far as my character is concerned, is he wants to get his family back on track. He knows he's done bad things. He knows he's made mistakes. He knows he's in a bad place, and he doesn't want to stay there. And that's whether you can get behind that character and what he aspires to. He aspires to the American dream. He wants to be a good, upstanding, contributing American citizen. Is it possible? Is his humanity completely lost? You know, is he a rifle? You know, should he just be put in jail and never let out? But with a guy like this, can you actually contain him? The drive behind these guys is incredible.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Those are the things that I try to put the character. Those are the things that I talk about obsessively with the creators and with my fellow actors that I love. You know, Ramon Rodriguez, Emilio Rivera, Jay. We talk about all these things. We talk about our families. We talk about how those stories of our families intersect with our fictional family, and our fictional family intersect with the greater population and the audience that we would really like to reach and serve ultimately. So, you know, it's high hopes and big ambitions, but you know, you gotta have a reason to get up in the morning and turn up at work. So that's kind of what we aim for.
Well, here's
you never know as an artist whether it's going to translate through the show. So I'm hopeful that it does.
I think it does, and I think if shows like Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy have shown us anything, I think it's very possible for the television watching public to connect with a flawed character, because I think they tend to see themselves in that character, because nobody's life is without flaws and struggles of their own moral compass. So I think that's what you could definitely see right now in Javier. So I see the crowd connecting to that, definitely.
I can only hope so.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your character and Terry O'Quinn's character, just real quick. And you may or may not.
That's a lot of questions.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
There
seems to be a lot of tension that's underlying there between the two of them. Is there more to that story between yourself and Terry O'Quinn's character? You know, is there something in their history that keeps that tension just palpable at the top?
Yeah, there is a sense of that, but I haven't been clued in as to what it is.
Okay.
That's... They sort of like, but you know, I mean, there are a couple of surprises in the first season that I didn't see coming. I'll be honest. I mean, I was involved in the initial conversations about the potential of these certain ideas. You know, as to sort of like the potential of the character, like the idea that. But talking directly to the character of Terry Quinn, there's definitely a history there, and then there's these other surprises that come in the middle of the season that I didn't see coming, and to be honest, which was actually exciting for me. I love coming into work and reading the next script and sort of seeing what plot twists and turns they come up with out of the writer's room to keep the audience engaged. But I don't know, I haven't been told what's really going on with this theory, this connection between these two characters. All we mainly focus on in the first season, anyway, we still don't even answer that historically what happened between these two guys. But all we focus on primarily is that we are, because the show is really about Ryan's character.
Right.
So really, we stand as the two father figures in his life, and one is fighting on the side of good and will do whatever it takes to do that, and one is supposedly fighting on the bad side and trying to get to the good side, and this creates conflict for Ryan. So mainly our focus seems to seem and then we do have these repeated scenes with Terry and I where it's kind of like this one-upmanship, this kind of in my culture we call it we call our enemy our friend in war.
Okay.
In my culture we call it there's a word that we use, I don't know if it exists in any other language, but basically if you have it, you are defined as a warrior by your opponent. So then we view our opponent in war or in strategy as our friend. So you have to keep your enemy close, you know what I mean?
Right.
In order to win the war, in order to win the fight, you've got to try to understand, you've got to get inside the mind and the head of your enemy. And you have to understand it. If you don't understand who your opponent is, then you don't have a chance of winning. So it's kind of, the show at this stage revolves around a bit of that, you know? And so that's the main focus of it. But historically, I haven't been told that.
Well, thank you.
What the big deal is between these guys.
I'm in.
Of course, they want to beat each other.
I'm interested to find out.
I think there's a bit of chess playing going on between them, and I think they just, you know, it's that dirty secret amongst men. Like one side of any human being is if you've got bad habits. You know it's wrong. You know you're drinking coffee or you eat the chocolate cake in the morning. You know it's wrong. You know you shouldn't do it, but you love it. And so I think with these two guys, they know it's wrong, some of the things they do, but there's something in, just on an animal level, they love the challenge of battle and war. They love the fight. And they love the game of strategy of trying to beat an opponent that you think is a worthy opponent. So primarily, their relationship revolves around that stuff in the first season. They might dig deeper if we get to play in the second season.
That's a great relationship. You fuel each other, that's for sure. And I love seeing it on screen. So, again, thank you so much for taking the time today to do the interview. And much luck with success in the show. And hopefully we'll be talking again next season.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, Cliff.
Thanks, Christina. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Cliff, stand by. I'll get you, Mike.